Hello and welcome to the Carbitrage Podcast, episode 317. I am Eric Berger, joined as always by my co-host Ryan Sinitsky.
Hello. Hey, that's me. Hello.
Welcome back.
Hi. There's a red line on the screen in OBS. What's that?
It means an active window selected. That is not on the stream, don't worry.
Okay, don't worry.
Anytime you click an element.
Oh, okay, cool. Just want to make sure that was all fine.
Indeed.
We have beers and patrons. And our patrons, patreon.com/carbitrage, where you will pay us to do this. There we go.
That, you summed it up.
Yes, I did.
I have the same type of beer, and
yep,
so do you.
Mine's mostly empty, but I'll get another one at some point.
I will try to replenish. I also still have the same Coors Light. So.
I'm just very excited about our first topic.
Okay,
so
well.
Because last episode, if you listened, which I know you did, because that was our last episode, and you've been hankering for a new episode for a week, we mentioned that we might do a $6,000 warm hatch challenge. And so
we did not lie to you.
So... what I call a warm hatch is a car. It's not quite a hot hatch, but it's still fun and good.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is we have $6,000. We don't have to spend all of it. You can spend less than $6,000, but you can't go over that. You can't find a car that's like $6,100. So it has to be $6,000 or less. So here, for instance... Oh, did you go over?
I picked a car that was $6,500, but I'm very confident.
You can argue them down.
Very confident.
Okay, word. Yeah, something like that. That's fine. But if it's a car where it's like...
If it was like seven or more, I'm like, yeah, screw
if,
that. That's
if it's like, you know, like in a Barth at like $6,100, then you're like, ooh, that's definitely going to be sold at exactly $6,100, not a penny less. Because like that's what people were to do. Also, a Barth is a hot hatch, not a warm hatch.
Fine.
So, I will start here with my 2002 R50 Mini 1. It is blue. It's got a Union Jack that is faded on the roof. It has the wheels that look like Mugen R&Rs, and it's got white
missing
mirror
the center caps.
Yes, they are. It also has a salvage shuttle.
Oh, perfect.
Yep, and it's $3,210.
And these have the Peugeot engines, right? So they're actually okay?
Yeah, I think so. It's got the non-turbo four-cylinder. It's got the two-spoke steering wheel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
Oh, God.
I love that. It's got a manual transmission, which was the one thing I looked for.
And it has the tachometer option on the right spot.
Yes, exactly. So if you look, it's non-turbo. You can tell the non-turbo Minis because they don't have the hood scoop on them. So
non-supercharged.
Or yeah, well, same thing. Turbo or supercharged. It's just the NA ones don't have the scoop on the hood, unless you...
But R50 and R53.
Yeah, we're supercharged, yes. And then the later ones, I think you could
R56 still... R56, they want turbo.
I think the R56, you could still get an NA one.
You could.
Yes.
But it was a terrible NA engine made by BMW, so
yeah, you
these
don't
actually
that
have
one.
The good Peugeot
ones. You want the actual R50.
You want a first gen.
Yes, and that's a very, very cool car. And... For $3,210, I can go and do all the fun bits and bobs. I can get that trim cleaned up so it's actually black.
And you can take side roads.
Yeah, I will enjoy the side roads.
Because it's in Iowa.
And also, it's got a salvage title, so I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, this car is perfect and lovely and good. No, I'm going to drive this car like it's meant to be driven.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually something that if I had that in available money, I would actually probably buy that right now.
Like, it doesn't look too bad. Do you know why it was salvaged? I don't really care.
Don't care.
Right.
Or no.
I
didn't
curious.
Bother. It didn't bother. No idea. Probably it got into a car accident and just had like...
The hood got dented because it's a huge clamshell thing and it cost more than the car.
It like cracked the windshield and then like the car was like KBB'd at $4,000 and it was like $2,200.
I don't know why that reminds me. I'm interject real quickly.
Yes.
I was driving down to Iowa. Wow.
Yeah.
I got an email finally on the Tesla hit and run. They finally accepted liability a month later.
Oh my God.
Oh, I hate insurance companies.
That's ridiculous.
But at least I'll get it fixed now. It's good.
That's good. But sorry. Yeah, so I think this would be a really, really, really good pick, and I would actually buy this right now. And I would immediately go just do some suspension work, maybe an intake on it, and call it a day. And I wouldn't even put an exhaust on it. I'd just make sure the AC works.
They are fun.
That'd be such a good fun car. So what would be your first choice?
My first choice, let me pull up the link here before I talk about it, is a car that looks very hot, but I promise you it's not. And okay. I'm not reading this like a Dr. Seuss book. That's just how it is. So at the turn of 1999, Toyota brought
not hot.
The 1ZZ FE, which is an economy engine. Yes. It's a 1.8 fuel miser engine. They put teeny tiny bit bigger valves in it and shoved it in the MR2 Spider and the Celica GT,
yes,
which looks very similar to the actually hot GTS, but it is not hot.
So did they like detune the engine computer? Or
no, just it isn't a hot engine. It makes 138 horsepower.
Oh, that's not hot, no. That's and not hot at all. It's got the cool aftermarket body kit, though. It kind of looks like HKS, or not HKS, it looks like a TRD Hyper
kit. TRD Phase 1 kit is what this has, yep.
Oh, that is a TRD kit.
Yep. TRD Phase 1
kit. I really, really like what they did with the fenders. That's actually really cool. I like that more than the later one. I really like that a lot.
The Celica of the early 2000s, honestly, it's a pretty good car. Every time I see a clean GTS,
Integra. It's an Integra that doesn't get stolen. It's just as good as an Integra. Like, this is another car. It's on my short list, and I bought the Fiat. Like, yeah. I kind of wanted something like this. It was just a little bit too big for the driveway, and that's kind of why I nixed it. Like, I would still gladly buy one. And I've like, whenever I see one, I go, man, I should actually buy one of those because these are really cool cars.
Talk about an actually good product that nobody talks about.
Any of those 2000s Toyotas that have the ZZ engines are actually quite good cars.
And up until at least recently, where the MR2 at least started getting attention paid to it, these, I think somebody will pay attention at some point.
I think so, yeah.
No, but right now,
I think if you are in the market for a, like a 2000s era Toyota, a Celica X or a Celica GTS or a Corolla XRS or a Matrix XRS
or a Vibe GT
all of those are worth buying. I think the Vibe GT will probably be the last one to appreciate in value. But I think that it's gonna go Celica, Matrix, Corolla. I think that's the way it's gonna go as they appreciate,
because the weirdos are gonna be the ones that drag the value up. I think the Corolla is gonna be number two.
Okay, that's fair.
But they're extremely rare.
Yes,
and the matrices are not.
No, they're not. You're right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
But it's also why
I think the Matrix might go, because they're so unknown, as people are going to discover the Matrix before they discover the Corolla.
That's probably true.
Because it also is a hatchback.
Corolla XRS in good condition. If one of those popped up and it wasn't insane money, like, I bet that's like E39 M5 production numbers. I bet they made almost none of them.
Yeah. And they're extremely good.
So good. And it's so stupid.
When we got one on trade at Bring a Trailer, somebody had just like, they needed to do like $2,000 of work and they didn't want to. And Bill was going to scrap. And I go, Bill, this is not a scrappable car. And he's like, it's a Matrix. I'm like, no, it's a Matrix XRS. Look at the tachometer. He goes, why does that go so high? I'm like, let's put some struts in this, put the brakes on it, I'm going to have you take it out for a drive. He gets out of the car, he goes, what the fuck is going on with that? Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, trust me, it's a totally ridiculous engine.
It's the L.
I'm like, the Lotus was involved, it got really weird, and they stuffed the engine in the normal car. And he goes, well, we're definitely going to sell that, but for a hell of a lot more money than I intended originally. And
exactly.
Then he sold it for like $5,000, and like the paint was shot.
Mm.
But like I wanted him to like sell it for like good money, and like the thing is like Bill always used to have like a good car ready to go for people that are going through treatment through AA.
Mm-hmm.
So like when people are coming out of rehab and everything,
recovery,
recovery or getting their like shit together,
yeah,
they can get like a good, reliable, good car that can be serviced by a shop that's like owned literally by their sponsor, stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
And like. He's like fair. Like I think like five or six is like very fair for a totally sorted Matrix that has like bad paint.
Again, it's been done.
Like, yeah, everything's perfect.
It will run in spite of you.
Yeah,
it will get you to your job until you are fully back in your.
He was originally a self for like 2,000. I'm like, Bill, you're doing yourself a disservice, and somebody's gonna get something that's gonna be insane to insure for like $2,000 because like they're gonna expect it to be a vanilla one. It's not. And the thing was is like, yeah, well, he had this, like he had this car for six, and then he had like three, like 2.0 Beetle automatics for like $1,500 a pop.
As far as VW powertrains go,
But I mean, like, if you want a car for like getting your life back together, yeah, that's a pretty good car.
An ABA and the 4-speed auto,
yep,
it's fine.
Yeah, and it's fine. It was fine. It's a fun car. It'll give you a little like serotonin boost when you get, mm-hmm, into it. Like,
you're not like ashamed to get out of a first gen.
No, it's a fun little goofy car, and like that's actually like one of the things. I'm like, and there's a billion of them. They're all cheap, and that's one of the reasons that Bill kept getting them, is because there's a billion of them, and they were like, actually, like, they had really good response for people that were coming out of detox, because, mm-hmm, they were, you know, they're like, oh man, everything sucks, but like, I just got this like screaming deal on like an actually cute car. Like, that really helped them out. So it's, yep, like a really wholesome thing. But yeah, any of the 2ZZ and 1ZZ cars, all great cars.
I agree.
So for my choice, I'm going to do this Giallo 500 Sport that I found.
Hold on, I'm pulling up the link.
And the reason I'm so excited about it, it's sold! Ah! It was so good of a price. Like, I'm glad that it's sold, but yeah, they wanted $5,900 for this 2012 Fiat 500 Sport.
Nice.
In yellow.
Yep.
And it's manual.
The
and it has a sunroof.
Such a good car.
Yeah, and it's got a sunroof too. So it's like just a perfect spec.
I loved my sports.
I wish that I got a car with a collar and a sunroof.
Manual climate too. Oh,
I know.
So
it's so good.
Good.
Yeah.
It's
a good
spec. Good spec.
Perfect spec. Like, that is a really good way to spend $6,000 for a warm hatch. And like, I don't have a penny left over, but as long as I know.
Only 83,000 miles.
There's
on
a
it
reason
too?
This sold. Jeez. Like that. I'm like, this is such a good car. It was, wow, like a buy here, pay here lot.
Like, yeah, I was going to say that the dealer doesn't look like my favorite kind of spot.
The dealer had no clue what they were sitting on. Like, there's a good reason that sold when it did.
These are phenomenal.
Yeah. I would save get different wheels. And maybe like a sway bar or something. I don't know. They handle pretty well.
The intakes make them sound great. So oh, yeah, definitely do the intake. Do
an intake, and actually, no, not a sway bar. It actually do lowering springs.
Springs are easy. Sway bars are almost impossible.
Okay.
They're buried like above the subframe.
Oh, fuck that. No. Nope.
Awful. Never
yeah,
do that.
Nope. Doing springs. I would lower it with some springs.
Tint
it. And nope, no tent, because I don't want to have the whole point of the sunroof is I absolutely hate feeling
okay,
like I'm in a
fine
cave.
You
like,
and I have, I hate I need, sunroofs. I love tent. You love yeah, sunroofs. You hate tent.
I need it. I want a big glass house, and that's a big glass house.
And it's yellow.
Yes. It's a color.
And the dash is yellow because that's how Fiat rolls.
Yes. It's so good.
I love it. I yep, love the color keyed dashes.
Yep. That's super good. 10 out of 10.
All
so
right. I have one more pick.
What's your last pick?
And this one I actually picked first. But
this
like,
is a class of car I'm so excited about.
Stand by this decision because I know you have driven a 2.5 liter Mazda powered. What the hell?
Wait.
Why did that not link? Uh-oh.
Let me work on your link.
Okay. So anyway, I picked a second gen Mazda yes, 3. Like I think it might have even been the first year of it. But the 2.5.
It just really wants you to log into Facebook for some
we
reason.
We talked about the 2.5 because of your van.
Yes.
Vanagon Skywalker. Super this is good, that same engine, and it's in a Mazda 3, which is a lightly such warmed over version of the exact same car as the first gen, which is a great driver's car.
It is such a good car. I'm just trying to get that link to
and
work.
It is a gray, old Mazda with faded headlights, but like the 2.5 makes good power. That's not a heavy car. It's cheap to insure. It's very fun to drive. The 2.5 liter Mazda 3 is a car I recommend to people when they don't want a TSX. Like
yeah,
those are
no,
my go-to.
It's a very, very good car. Oh, it's because the listing doesn't exist anymore. The car sold.
It sold between this morning. I checked the link
yes,
earlier.
No, it sold instantly. So, hey, try taking everything after that question mark away.
All right, let's try this.
Yep, and then delete the question mark as well.
Okay.
And then click enter. No, click enter. No, right there. There you go. Now try clicking on the link.
Oh, damn
false. It. Yeah, it's gone. Oh,
well.
Wow.
Anyway,
it was
listed.
It was gray. It was manual at a 2.5.
Yep.
Ah,
manual,
man.
Manual 2.5. Like
how
it
much
looked,
was it?
This was the one I was confident I could get for $6,000. It was listed for $6,500.
Oh, you could easily get that for $6,000. Yep. Like, because they rust constantly. You just look in your car for
this
two
one
seconds.
Wasn't rusty.
Yeah, but I guarantee you there's rust.
It was going to.
It.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
No, there will be rust on it. It's
the
just
fade indicated to me that it potentially came from the south, so it got all the downside of the faded paint and the headlights
oh,
being
perfect,
basically non-transparent
yeah,
anymore, and then it will rust next winter.
Yeah, that's fine. Actually, you just you take them and you just do like basically the thickest like undercoating you possibly can.
Yes.
My mom actually, she has a Mazda 2, mm-hmm. which is a Mazda Demio. Very good car. And she,
I assume that's more than $6,000. Otherwise, that would be a great.
No, they're cheap.
Really?
Very cheap.
Oh. Or the Toyota version of that too.
Yeah, the Yaris. but so she had
Scion. Sorry, my
yeah. The Scion is it's also a Yaris. Actually, fun fact.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
that was called a Yaris sedan. but anyway, so her car was actually rusting the rocker panels really bad, and she could not find another car she really liked. Hmm. So she actually just spent $2,000 and fixed all the rust. And, like, I went over it with the weakest magnet I possibly could, and the magnet stuck consistently. Like, they didn't just, like, fill it with body filler.
Nice.
It was, like, $2,000, a really good shop, like, down in Bloomington. It's, like, it's called Audi Auto Body. It's, like, some...
Audi Body?
the guy was from... I know the guy is from Honduras.
I love Honduras.
Yeah, and he's just a really cool dude. Yeah, they did great work, and
we
it was very,
more
very
of
cheap.
That.
Good
of people loving fixing, their yeah. car and not liking the new bullshit.
Yeah, and no, that's exactly what she does. Like, she's like, I can't find a car that I like. Yeah. Like, she really likes the 500. The seat position, my dad doesn't quite fit in
the bread van. Yeah,
yeah, he doesn't fit as well inside the 500, and there's no
even
rear
with
door.
The sunroof car.
Even with this, well, in the sunroof, he does fit.
Okay.
But rear doors was the killer for it.
Oh, sure.
That's why she chose the Mazda over
Fiesta ST?
Then you're getting into a hot hatch where she doesn't want to have to live with that.
No, you're right.
See, that's what I mean. Like, that's why I love this category of car. It's
the
like
early Fiesta 1.6.
Yeah, hatch. And then you have the terrible interior.
Also, same platform as her current car.
Never mind. And a worse interior. Yep. So she's just like.
Yep.
The only solution is this car, because a Yaris holds its value like crazy. And
is she the person who bought like 5 Honda Elements?
No. Okay. So my mom has had a very, very strange back and forth history of cars.
Well, I know she had the Fit forever.
So this is her history of what I know what she's owned. Her first car was a 71 Celica.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Very
Hell
good car.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was her first car she actually owned. Prior to that, she drove her mom's Edsel. But she has 71 Celica, and then she had a Mercedes 240 non-diesel manual, like the 70s 240 sort of thing.
230 or 250?
230 then. Okay. Yeah, 230, the four-cylinder.
Okay, yep.
But a manual, one of those.
Hell yeah.
And then she
I
got
didn't know your
a,
mom was cool. What the hell?
Yeah, then she got a Dodge Caravan panel van.
Ooh, oh.
Because
what year
was
that?
Like 1985.
Wow. Because
she was a traveling salesperson who did like high-end fashion.
Okay.
So
Def Target.
Sergio Tangini, I think is his name. But like, it was like basically like, hey, would you like to buy a tracksuit for $300? It's made of velvet. Like, she sold those sort of things.
Okay.
Like, you know, it was like totally insane, like 1980s, like tracksuits and like ski suits.
I just watched War Games last night.
Yeah.
I definitely.
Yeah. So that's what she sold. And then after that, so she had that. Then what'd she have? She had that until she had me. And then she got a Chevy Citation.
Citation.
Which is weird because, like, she's like, cool car, weird car, bad car.
Yeah.
And then she got a Ford Contour.
Oh, yeah.
With a manual.
Hell yeah.
Very good car.
Four-cylinder?
Yeah, because she is, it is just the cheapest one you can get. So, yeah, Ford Contour. And then after the Contour, she got a Hyundai Tiburon.
Oh, I remember that car.
Yeah, awesome car.
Wow.
Hyundai Tiburon.
Wow, I've known you for way too
yes.
long.
Yes.
Entirely too long.
She had a Hyundai Tiburon, in which she then traded the Tiburon for the Fit.
Yep.
Had the Fit until she got this car. So
yep.
She's like...
We've talked about the Fit on this show.
Yes,
like
and so, yeah, so she's been, like, actively her entire life has basically been, like, I would like a 71 Celica with four doors. Like,
but you don't have that? Well, what do you have?
Yeah, I need, and then, like, occasionally she'll get something that's, like, an actual, like, absolute requirement is, like, she needs to have, like, all right, a panel van for her job, or, like, then, like, her mom car for being a mom, and then, like, immediately got out of that. And as soon as she could find a coupe that had a back seat that was reasonable, she got into it. So, yeah, that's
first gen Tib. pretty good.
Really pre-facelift too, when it actually looked good. Yeah. Like, that's a very cool, good car. So
I remember when those first came out, it was a very polarizing design, but it's one of the ones that aged into looking good.
It is a car that I think nobody appreciated in the era.
100%.
I know I didn't.
Well, that's why they're like all gone.
Like, well, the thing is, like, when she first got it, like, I appreciated it. I'm like, this car, I feel like, will eventually be worth money.
Yeah.
And I was right. I was off by 10 years for when they appreciated in value.
Sure.
But I now think that I'm like, these are definitely something like this. There is buzz about them.
Was that a hatchback?
Yes, they were.
That might be a decent warm hatch.
Doesn't exist, unfortunately. There's like five of them left in the world.
I was going to say, yes, if you could find one for sale, it probably every would be less one than $6,000.
Every single one was purchased, and the engine was yanked out to be put in a DSM. Because it was just the 4G63.
The first gen never had the 2.7 option, did it?
No, they're just 4G63. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the best one. Yeah, everything after that was worse.
Yeah.
The second generation was terrible. So the third gen was even worse. Yeah, they had second the four-cylinder or a 2.7, yeah.
Okay.
But all the other Tiburons were terrible. Only a first-gen, only the pre-facelift. That is a car where every single update of the car made it objectively worse.
Well, let's be real. There's a lot of cars where we've even talked about
that. Yeah, but that is a car where it's like every single update was a drastic step down from the one before it.
Okay, you're right.
That's what I mean. Like, drastic changes. Yeah, just like, this is bad. This is not good. This is much worse. This is even worse than you made it before. Kill it now.
I loved how the second gen Tib looked, but then I looked at the specs. I'm like, ooh,
no. Nope. Not a good car.
Noped out of that.
Yep.
I have no segue for this one, but let's talk about Saab. Apparently.
I can tell you right now from that roofline that would be a Saab. That's a Saab roofline.
It is a Saab roofline. This thing kind of looks like a Lucid. The biggest.
So wait, Saab's coming back?
So hold on.
What?
This is an actual vehicle that runs and drives and has been in the hands of the press.
Oh.
For almost a year, and I had no idea.
Sounds like Saab.
Exactly.
It's tracks.
174 kilowatt hours. The battery is almost twice the size of the biggest Model S.
What?
424 horsepower. So, like, it's the same power as the lowest end. So, like, this thing is designed to be the quirky, daily, do-what-it-promises car. And even Top Gear UK has done a segment on this, and I had no idea.
What?
The thing about this car that I hate the most is the fact that apparently it's known, and I had no idea.
Why doesn't this exist on the road in the United States?
I don't know.
Does it exist on the road in Europe?
Nope. They're only pre-production cars.
What?
But it.
Oh, okay. No, we have talked about NEVS, but I didn't know that they had done anything with that.
So this is the NEVS.
Yes. So that's the thing is we've talked about them announcing the NEVS.
Oh, okay.
But they have not said a peep about it being in production. We just said that it was planned.
So apparently that looks like a pretty much production-ready vehicle to me. So maybe they just went ahead and did it and
yeah,
just
apparently.
Didn't tell anyone. But I...
Oh, because they're owned by Evergrande. Oh. Well,
they got passed around a fair bit. But yeah, the fact that this is now owned by a company that clearly has the resources
to make
an EV, which all Chinese-backed companies do, and
yes.
It's going to be good, because let's be real, they make way more EVs than anyone else in the country.
It will send my information, but as long as it goes to the CCP and not to my insurance agent, I don't care, because I don't live in China. So, like...
That's a hot take, but I get behind like, it.
I would rather my driving information go to the CCP than to my insurance.
So we're in an election year right now, and everyone's targeting the CCP as a bad thing. Meanwhile, we're here like, as long as my info gets sold to those guys and not insurance companies, that should tell you just how far down the food chain.
I don't trust them.
Insurance companies, insurance is a scam.
What's the CCP going to do?
Well, I don't know.
Absolutely
make
nothing
a TikTok
at all.
About how hard you drive? I don't care.
Yeah, I don't know. So there's a funny thing. It's like, there's a TikTok that I saw. It's like, what people expect TikTok to be? And it's just like a bunch of people dancing around with Mao's little red book with like red sun in the sky playing in the background. And then what TikTok really is, and it's the history of the Civil War as explained by cats.
I saw a similar post, and it was on, I think, Instagram, but it was showing about TikTok.
Yeah.
It was like, what you think TikTok is, and it was very similar to that, but then it showed the most popular current TikTok, and it was like somebody making bacon or something like that. Yeah. It's just like this most nonsensical, didn't matter thing.
No, TikTok like, is fine. It's just as a social media platform. I don't care if they're...
I hate it, but I don't want anyone to ban it, because when you ban shit, that just turns into too much pressure.
Well, that's exactly my issue with this, is like I don't think that you should be banning people's social media platforms. Like True Social should not have been should not be banned. It sucks, and it should be allowed to fail on its own merits.
So should we be banning insurance companies giving our drive data?
Well, yeah, that's different. It's not a First Amendment thing.
I suppose.
I think that we should just it's a difference in the First Amendment of like saying no, you straight up cannot use this app. It's different than
block TikTok from selling your data to people then?
Yeah, okay. I'm okay with that. Okay.
I'm fine with that, too.
Yeah, like, selling data is different than First Amendment
okay.
speech, yeah. So, I'm totally in favor of First Amendment stuff. Like, you should have your shitty social media app. If you want it, do it. You should not be allowed to ban it because you're unhappy with it.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. One more thing before we move on to the next topic.
Yes.
This uses, like, Rimus front motor technology. So, it actually uses hub motors.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, no axles or anything like that. And
the hub motors.
That's why this is only...
And a whole ass load of unsprung weight.
That's why this is only 424 horsepower. The motors are actually quite small, compact, and light. So, yes, that was my first thought, too. Is like, oh, it's great. It's going to hit a pothole. It's going to destroy the wheel. Nope. No, actually, I seriously have to imagine the brain trust that made the Rimus wheel motor technology that's super lightweight and powerful has to have been the same people. Or they copied it in China and just sold it in this car. I don't know. But is it
actually like the wheel bolts immediately up to the motor?
No, there's still a friction brake disc and caliper.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Like
yeah,
that all.
But yes,
actually on the hub. Because like I could understand it where it's like, okay, you don't have a differential, but you have two hub motors that are mounted inboard.
No, it's not
with
like
an axle that goes to it.
Nope,
so then
no
your,
axles.
So then your unsprung weight is not affected because that's actually mounted. And
but,
that's the pivot
but the
point.
Upside. Very excellent turning radius because
cool.
No CV shafts.
Yeah, no, you can just turn the wheel as much as you want.
Again,
future
like,
drift car.
You don't need, well, it's only 424 horsepower. 100 horsepower an axle, per corner. It's plenty. It is plenty.
Yes.
It's like the same power as my car.
But I mean, that technology could be.
Oh, yeah. We learned from the Toyota rear electric drive thing that, like, it's quite detuned.
Yes.
You can make a lot of power, but I like a lot of that tech, and Saab is wonky as frig, and bad cars are good, so I want more of that information, please.
Yeah, as long as they're not selling my information to people that can negatively affect me. So,
which is your insurance company, and I guarantee they're not selling information to your insurance company.
Perfect. Well, Xi Jinping can know exactly how often I go to Popeye's. Anyway, so I was blown away yesterday.
Okay.
Absolutely, completely blown away.
By what?
Oh, shit. You need to log in with... Oh, wait, no, you don't. Never mind. You don't have to log in. Scroll down. Scroll down some more. Oh, thank God. There it is.
Okay.
Okay.
Now I'll bring it up on the screen.
Yes. This insanely big jump in value graph is the graph for Duesenberg non-supercharged Model Js sold at auction. I was under the impression they were still depreciating.
So,
and
oh,
also,
okay, reserve not met for red. I got
it's,
you. Okay.
But the thing is, all right, you go, okay, this is clearly moving up. Now, look on the right at the scale.
Oh!
Yes.
That's
the scale in which these are rising in value.
So these are being purchased by the unbelievably wealthy.
Yes. So now, if you look at... So the first entry was just from 2019. If you just hover over that little green dot, that is a 1934 Duesenberg Model J, Prince of Wales, Berlin. $450,500.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So maybe let's go just a little bit higher and go to... All right. So this is a very, very, very desirable one. It's a 1930 Duesenberg Model J convertible sedan by Murphy. Coach-built bodywork. Very good.
Convertible sedan. I understand that applies here. Wow.
Yeah. Very cool car. So you can see that there's, all right, clearly there's a difference here of, you know, about $500,000 between the very good ones and the very meh ones. However, now if you look at, let's look in 2023, let's look at the cheapest sold Duesenberg Model J.
Which,
right there.
In 23,
right,
it's this.
Well, yes. So the absolute cheapest one sold in 2023 was a 1931 Duesenberg Model J convertible sedan by LeBaron. LeBaron is the factory coach builder. So that is for normal vanilla bodywork, and that was $1 million. $1,500,000 or $50,000.
$1 million with 50 Mirages on top.
Yes, exactly. That is quite the jump from 700,000.
$450,000.
It went $500,000 since the pandemic is appreciated in value.
And the car market has softened since the pandemic,
especially
too.
For blue chips like these. Because as a reminder, like, people are not as well off. And so, yeah. Now they're $2 million, $3 million, $4 million for them. Yeah.
What is
again Murphy bodywork, Durham bodywork, and now if you scroll, maybe that bottom one, right, the very very bottom one. All right, so that one is still LeBaron bodywork. It's a dual cal Phaeton, and that was $1.1 million last year. So 2024. Let's look at the two that have sold this year. There is one that sold for 2.6.
Oh,
again, factory bodywork. Of course, that's a disappearing top convertible, which is pretty cool. It's a hard top convertible.
Jesus Christ.
And then there's the $4 million one, which is a Murphy bodywork.
Another disappearing
top. $3.8 million. I'm sorry. But I was really hoping that one day I'd be able to get like a shitty LeBaron bodied Duesenberg, but apparently fucking not.
Well,
and these are the non-supercharged ones, by the way. These are the relatively slow ones.
The crap.
So if you scroll up to the top of the screen and you go to the Duesenberg SJ, click that, 32 to 37. And I scroll back down.
There aren't very many, as it turns out.
This is click on the 5-year just to make sure we're on the 5-year. All right, so yeah, this is the 5-year. Okay.
There have been three.
Yes, in 5 years. So 2020 was $781,000 for a 1929 Murphy hardtop, 2.9 for a Victoria bodied, and then $3 million for a LeGrand bodied convertible. Boy, that's a supercharged one. Talk about, you know, we were talking about last episode about how Bugatti like set precedents for like race cars.
Yeah.
Like, I guess this is the result of what happens when you have a car that's exactly 100 years old. And because remember, every single Duesenberg Model J was made in 1927. They were just sold throughout the 30s.
What the?
They overproduced and then the Great Depression.
Oh,
hit.
My God. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Every single one was made in 1927. And it took them until like 1939 to sell all of them.
So every chassis was actually produced in 1927.
Yeah. But so this is the thing.
That's a cool fact.
Yeah. This is a car that's 100 years old and it's still absolutely daily drivable. And it is still objectively a better luxury car than most entry-level Euro luxuries today. Like, you get more out of a 1929 Duesenberg than you get out of a BMW, like, 1 Series or a CLA, like, 250.
Oh, also, fun fact, BMW has a 22-month dealer lot supply of the X2 right now.
I love that good.
I also love that.
They're never, ever going to sell those because they suck.
Pieces of shit.
Good. I don't feel bad about that.
No.
But,
the no pre-war guy, would rather daily drive.
Yeah, no, genuinely, like, would you like to have a form of air conditioning? Would you like to have anti-lock brakes of a sort? Would you like to have a radio? Would you like to have a refrigerated beverage holder? Would you like to have dual zone climate control?
Ryan, where will I plug in my progressive snapshot?
You don't.
Oh, excellent.
There's none.
Excellent. So you're saying that if I buy a Duesenberg, I will not have any sort of data transmission issues?
You really hate commuting, right?
Like you do, which is why I drive an electric car.
Yes, you drive a self-driving car. Mm-hmm. And the worst part about commuting in a manual transmission car is having to constantly shift between first and second and everything because you're in gridlock and you have to sit there and ride your clutch and everything, right?
Yes, but I don't deal with traffic ever.
But let's say
you do. Yes.
Duesenberg, you can throw it in third gear, the top gear. There's enough torque in top gear in the transmission to not have to shift in traffic. The other gears are just to make you accelerate faster. The cars have enough torque. If you go wide open throttle, if you like clutch dump in third gear, mm-hmm. it will do a burnout in third gear. That's a fucking awesome car.
It's many, many torques.
Yeah. It's is
even in a non-blown one?
Yes.
Very good.
Both of them. The blown one just does a bigger burnout.
I did hover over the most expensive non-supercharged one, which sold in 2021 for $5.725 million.
It's a great-looking car, though. So, for instance, a Duesenberg SJ had 320 horsepower.
Jesus.
They weighed, like, I think 5,000 pounds. So,
but it also had probably 700 foot-pounds of torque. I mean, the engines were huge.
Getting to that. For the non-supercharged, they had 425 pound-feet of torque. And at that point in time, they didn't have a way of accurately measuring factory torque for the supercharged ones.
I believe that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's be real. Like, 1,000 horsepower capable chassis dynos haven't been around that
425 pound-feet of torque is incredible. And, yeah, that for a car like that, that is great. And also, the tires are like, you know, this one.
I was going
like,
to say.
The very small tires.
That's kind of where I was going with the
third
gear
reason
clutch dump.
That you can clutch dump in them and do a burnout with 425 pound-feet of torque. And then you can just, like, let the car idle forward. Like, it's just hilarious, these cars. They're so silly. The power-to-weight ratio for them was not accurate based on this. Disregard.
Entirely not correct.
Yep, that is not a correct thing. But they made 46 horsepower per liter, which is actually quite good.
Wow, especially on like the compressor ratio, the fuels at the time. We've had talks about that for a long time. Fuel was shit until...
You just have whatever the fuck fuel is available, and it'll run an 88. The only reason you don't put 88 into a Duesenberg is because the ethanol content will actually hydrolock the engine.
Great.
Yes. Or not hydrolock, I'm sorry, vapor lock the carburetors.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because the low boiling point.
Yes.
I know we had almost a full episode on fuels, but what was the approximate year where, like, fuel became regulated and, like, decent in this country? Wasn't it, like, the 80s?
Yes.
I thought so.
And then they regulated the measurement system in, like, the 50s.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And, like, avgas is just, like, make it higher octane.
Great. Makes me feel really
that's
good.
Your avgas.
By being in the air with pistons.
This is also predated leaded gasoline.
Really?
They made the Lycoming inline 8. Yeah. They predated leaded gas. So, it also, dual red cam inline 8.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not your normal L-head engine. Like, no. This is, if you took what Bugatti was doing in Europe, and then you made that on American scale to make just a land yacht that's as comfortable, as perfect as possible, that's what they did.
With all
also,
of the tech.
Also, fuck. That is it. That's the one I want. I want 1929 Duesenberg Model J Berlin hardtop. Look at that. That's incredible.
The skirted rears.
God damn it.
Well, I hate to break it to you, Ryan. Although this is far from the most expensive, it is $2.26 million.
Imagine being Jeff Bezos and not daily driving that thing. I would absolutely buy a whole bunch of apartments in the Bay Area, and I'd go pick up rent by hand.
In 30
driving
years.
Driving that while wearing a top hat.
I just want to daily the Z8.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a good daily. But, like, yeah, there's a reason
well,
these
the
cars...
Phantom,
like, I'm really happy that these cars are worth what they're worth. Like, this is one of the cars I should never, ever be able to afford, because there's
also,
a great problem with the world if I can afford a Duesenberg.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that will never be reality.
Either I'm making way too much money for what I'm doing, or that car has a serious issue with the market.
But this graph here, before we move on... young people are still interested in old cars.
Yes, right there. Yeah. That nobody who is interested in... Nobody that grew up with these cars is alive.
Correct.
My grandma grew up with these cars,
mm-hmm.
and she just died.
Correct.
Like, that. The average person that grew up with this car is 100 years old.
And your grandma likely wasn't driving the year she died. So.
No, she wasn't. She quit driving in 2006.
Okay.
Now, there's one more Duesenberg I want to show you.
Okay.
I've scrolled down... Or scroll up again, I'm sorry. Okay. Now, if you click the SSJ... this is the one with multiple carburetors. And there's none in the last 5 years. There was one that sold, and it was sold for all of the money.
I believe you.
It was like $10 million, I think.
Jesus Christ. I assume it's the one that they have a picture of.
Yeah, there's two.
Okay, there are two. Okay. So what does the second S mean? Super?
$22 million is what it sold for.
Ah. Does it have two superchargers on it then?
I believe so, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to get to it. It was the fastest pre-World War II production car in the world. Like, that's what it is.
So it's the Monteverdi High Speed, but before the war?
Yeah, basically. It's an incredible vehicle. Just all Duesenbergs are great. I fucking love them. Every time somebody tries to talk to me about Packard, I just have no time for it.
I'm like, yeah, well, they were the American manufacturer of the Rolls-Royce. Great. I don't care.
I don't care. This is the Bentley. Like, the Packard was the Rolls-Royce. This is the Bentley. This is the better version in the era.
In the era. Absolutely.
Today, Rolls-Royce is better than Bentley.
Correct.
But back then, Bentley, up until the 2000s, was better than Rolls-Royce.
I agree. Yeah, until the Phantom came out. Oh, my God.
The Phantom is...
The early Arnage was actually a pretty good car.
Then the Bentley Turbo R or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yes, very good.
No, Turbo R, I think, predated the Arnage. The Arnage was the same basic car, but they facelifted it.
Yes.
And then there was a lot of Ford componentry that they put into that, which made it more reliable, but worse, and therefore...
Still Turbo.
Still a Turbo Bentley. Yeah. Those are cheap.
They are.
Those are very cheap.
Darren almost bought one at a Buy Here, Pay Here in Seattle, and I've been telling him to buy it. All the problems are electrical. He's an electrical engineer.
He would probably be fine.
He's the only person that can buy a Buy Here, Pay Here Bentley.
If it's mechanically okay.
supposedly.
They made one engine for 60 years. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm pretty
Parts
sure
Parts
okay.
do actually exist for those.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And you can make it reliable. And you just like...
Again, the engine is probably fine. I mean, yeah.
I'm sure you can make it reliable.
Bosch injection. It'll be okay.
Because it's just a Rover VA, which is a Buick, which right?
No.
It's not a Rover?
No, it dates back to the 60s. It is a bespoke aluminum overhead valve, 16-valve.
Oh, shit. Never mind. You can't make it better. But I was going to say, you just put nail head in, it'll be fine. But that's not.
The engine's actually okay.
Okay, that's good. Like, it's the shit around the engine that's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, never mind. I'm glad I don't. That's a car I don't want to know what I'm talking about with. Mm-hmm. I want to like peer pressure my friends into buying it. I don't want to fucking know a thing about it.
That's why
I
never
watch them have little success stories.
The Turbo R and like the Silver Seraph. Those are just cars. Like, yeah, I'm aware of it.
Yeah, I'm happy that you
should
have that.
Absolutely buy that car.
Somebody else should buy this car immediately. Anyway,
you know, I talked about BMW having a 22-month supply of the X2.
Yes.
I think that's because they make really bad decisions for the U.S. market.
They make bad decisions about everything because BMW is not a good company anymore.
They do. The last two positive things I've talked about, BMW and Carbitrage, are the 5 Series electric wagon, which isn't fully confirmed to not be coming here, but it'd be great if they did because electric wagons are awesome and I want one. And then there was the Neue Klasse, that really fucking cool four-door hatchback that kind of looked like a 2002.
I'll tell you there, fuck up both of those.
The wagon I'm sure is not coming here. And yeah, wouldn't you know it? They turned it into a crossover, and they made it worse.
That's bad.
That just looks like an XM that they put, like, a caricature.
What do you mean it looks like?
It is. It's an XM that they just caricaturized. Just BMW, stop it, man.
Imagine being a modern BMW enthusiast.
No.
I just don't get, like, imagine, like...
Not
the,
interested.
The F90 or whatever the fuck is, like, the cool car to you. Like... Yeah. How is that the car? Like, I just don't get it. Like, how do you look at modern BMW and go, this is better in any way than an E36 M3?
Even. Oh, yeah, and even that, ugh.
I know.
Bad one, too. And, like,
but
that's,
I'll
that's
say,
still better.
Because everybody that likes those new BMWs loves E36.
Oh, you're right.
But, like, how is that the, like, it's Sorry. Just not a good brand.
No, I was just thinking. Oh, don't worry, they put X after it. It's the Neue Klasse X.
I hate that.
I am so angry.
That's a bad thing.
I'm BMW. Stop it.
So here's another thing that's not BMW. Let's talk about
Thank
somebody
you.
Else.
Yeah, no, great. This is way
grace.
Better.
Honda and Nissan, which also this is an
Look
incredible photo that they were able to do.
Wow.
Ben took that photo.
Wow.
So Honda and Nissan have apparently decided to enter a strategic partnership. The Japanese government was trying to get Honda and Nissan to merge for a long time.
Like, that sounds like a really bad idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because Honda's like an independent car manufacturer.
Okay.
From the rest of the world. And they don't sell anything in Japan. Like, nobody buys Hondas in Japan because they suck. They sell all their cars in America.
Well, a lot of them are made here too. So
which
yeah.
makes sense. Like, Honda's a car brand for America. And then if you if you scroll down, they have one of my favorite Nissans, the Nissan or the Datsun, I think DB3. That is it.
Sweet.
Yes, very good. They 1950s car that I can't find any information on it. It's just cool as hell. And like that's like the last one left. Like literally the last one left.
I'm guessing that's probably the nicest condition one, and it's been left
alone.
Yeah,
it is, because it's the one of one left registered in Japan, and the only place they were sold. So it's literally the last one left.
Is that license plate blurred out, or is that just its actual like single character license plate number?
That one's blurred out.
Oh, okay.
And the reason it's blurred out is in Japan, sometimes you actually can find people's personal information. That guy has like the one of one car.
Ah, so he doesn't want people coming by his home.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But anyway, so, Japan's trying to make this happen. And like both companies for like the last 5 years have like rejected several attempts immediately. However, now they have a strategic partnership, which is not a merger, but it's a strategic partnership. It's completely different.
So is that like Toyota Subaru strategic partnership?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
So like for reference, all of Honda sells fewer cars than Daihatsu.
In Japan?
Yes.
Whew. I mean, Daihatsu makes a lot of K cars that are fantastic, but...
Just K cars, though. Honda makes everything for everyone, and they sell fewer cars in Japan than Daihatsu.
So there are very few Honda Everys?
There's Honda Nothings.
I'm glad that was audible, because, oh my god, my head just slumped in shame.
But yeah, so... over the years, like all the Japanese manufacturers have been kind of like merging to survive.
Okay.
And Honda's been kind of holding out. Like Honda's like when they do have a partnership, they make like very left field choices, like merging with Rover, or not merging, but having a partnership with Rover or GM or like Sterling. Sony, like just like weird shit like that. I mentioned that they were working with GM briefly to make like an EV sort of thing, and that's actually what Honda and Nissan are doing, because Nissan has great EV tech.
They do.
And Honda has great robot tech. So Honda can do the driving aids, autonomous modes and shit like that, and Nissan can make the EV powertrain. But also they've alluded to their next generation flagship, like NSX and GTRs, that will both be electric.
Are they going to platform share?
That's what we're wondering is like, is this going to be a shared platform sort of thing?
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting.
Cool. It sounds interesting. This could be absolutely cursed and awful and bad, but this could also be very cool and good. And also kind of playing off of this. So I mentioned very briefly a moment ago that Honda had a strategic merger partnership thing with Rover, right?
Yes.
And they actually made extremely cool D-Series valve covers.
Oh, for the Sterlings?
Yes. Not necessarily for the Sterling, but if you look up Rover D16 valve cover. Images. There you go.
Oh, wow.
Those are great looking valve covers. I was trying to find one the entire time I had my CRX. I could not find a single cam. I wanted that single cam so bad. That's an extremely good valve cover.
Yeah.
But
So people could say the word timeless. We throw that around way too much. That's actually timeless.
That's a great valve cover.
It's a valve cover. It's a piece of metal with strikes on it.
Yeah.
And it says the number of valves on it.
It's perfect.
If you add, well, you could add firing order if you really wanted to be perfection.
Oh, that'd be very cool. However, so what if I told you that? All right. Well, we have to go back a moment before I tell you what Honda did.
Okay.
Rover was part of British Leyland. British Leyland also encompassed Austin, which made the Mini Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
The Austin Mini was also sold in Italy as the Innocenti Mini. Innocenti Mini, right?
Okay.
You're familiar with Innocenti?
No, I'm not.
All right, Control-T, Innocenti Mini.
How do you spell Innocenti?
Innocenti. Innocent I. There you go.
Whatever. Innocenti. Okay. Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so it's just a white label.
Different front end.
Oh, okay.
Very cool, different front end. And then here's, they also made the Metro and stuff. There's a cool Fastboy Metro right down there.
I'm working on that one.
Yeah, so that's the Fastboy Metro. Oh, that one right there. The Di Tommaso right there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's the one you want. There's like 3 pixels on that photo, but that'll be fine. There we go. Cool. So yeah, that's your Fastboy.
Look
one.
At how good of a time this fellow is having.
Oh, yeah. Talking about a warm hatch. That's it. That's so fun. I want to drive that.
This is my summer car right here.
So when British Leyland, when Honda purchased their partnership sort of thing with British Leyland to partner with Rover, mm-hmm. they'd almost actually just outright purchased Innocenti.
Okay.
In Italy. And Honda's European headquarters, instead of being in the UK, would have been in Italy.
Oh, boy.
This happened in 1979. So.
That would have been interesting.
You know, everybody says the point in which, like, the timeline diverged and everything went bad is, like, Reagan. Yeah. The point in which the timeline merged and everything went bad was 1979, when Honda did not partner with Innocenti. That would have been the time.
Instead of Rover.
Imagine what Italian Euro Honda would be like today.
An like, Italian-bodied Honda-powered vehicle.
Like, the Honda, like, type, the Civic Type R would have been in a Barth instead of... like
Mugen or
it's,
something.
Like it's what it, no, it would have still been a Mugen thing, but instead of being like the weird, like not quite like Cosworth sort of thing, it would have been a Barth version.
Oh my god.
Like it would have been so much cooler.
I wanna see that.
They totally fucking ruined the world doing that.
Have there ever been Italian Japanese car manufacturer commingling or like resource sharing before?
Yeah.
Was it good?
It was the Alpha Sud.
So it wasn't good.
No.
Okay.
They did it backwards. Nissan did the bodywork, and Alfa Romeo did the engine. So that was poorly.
Let me rephrase. Has there ever been a sharing where they've gone the correct way, where the Italians do the styling and the Japanese?
Yes. There has been.
Okay.
The Isuzu 117.
Okay, that sounds like it's probably pretty good.
Look it up. It's real good. Look up early Isuzu 117 in particular. You want the round headlight boy. That one. That 117 coupe.
This guy?
You can go back up. Nope, just go to the Wikipedia page. You can just go straight to the Wikipedia page, too. Because there's a lot of stuff that you want to hear about. Dual overhead cam, inline four, five-speed manual, limited slip rear end. Imagine that in the 90s and being a Honda. Also, that one was rear-wheel drive. But
do they rust badly?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, what are you thinking? Come on.
Italian body. I figured.
It's an Italian body Japanese vehicle. A sporty Japanese vehicle, for that matter.
Do they rust body? Oh, well, yeah.
Come on. What?
What are Japanese and Italian cars known for?
They're not known for staying together.
But it was good while it lasted, right?
Oh, they're incredible. They made them until 1981, and they were produced with, they were replaced with the Piazza. The original version of 1.6 twin cam is a G180N, actually. Fun fact, it was the engine that was in the Isuzu Gemini ZZT, the one I really like.
Oh, my God.
You know, the really good version of the Chevette?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
But then they went all the way up to a 2-liter fuel-injected version on that. Bosch fuel injection, for that matter.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. They had a twin-carb single cam. That's a 1.8-liter and a twin cam with fuel injection. They had 3-speed automatic, 4-speed manual, 5-speed manual. They even had diesel version, which is, I love diesel coupes. I think they're silly. They're absolutely fantastic.
The diesel run out of time, then.
You might actually like the square headlight car, too, the later ones.
I did see that.
Yeah, the second facelift cars looked pretty good.
Okay, close the tab. Whoops. Yeah, whatever.
But yeah, no, it was designed by Giugiaro, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. But it was also designed, I believe there was some sort of partnership with Fiat when they were coming up with it, because the Fiat 124
well, they had good
and everything.
Very modern and high-tech running gear at the time.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't surprise me
if
a lot of that was done by Fiat.
I don't see anything on that, but I remember seeing that in passing just when I was doing some other research. There's some sort of commingling. But yeah, there have been things like that. So just imagine something similar to that as the EP3 Type R.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of being the EP3 Type R. Like, man. Imagine what you would have had. It would have been so good.
Oh, man.
Like, at that point in time, you had the Fiat Uno Abarth. Like, yeah. There were cooler cars in Italy.
It would have been like a pre-tuned.
The EP3 would have been incredible. I think that if Honda had put their European headquarters in Italy, it would have absolutely changed the world. Like, for the better.
Yeah, it would have had, like, Alfa Romeo styling, and it would have had a K-Series.
The Japanese golden age of cars would have never ended.
Well, here we are. They made the wrong decision.
Yep, and that's Honda. So Honda's just the BMW of Japan.
Well, at least they're not the Mercedes of Japan, which is continuing that same formula today of high-tech twin-cam four-cylinder and then putting it in a...
What? A GT?
They're putting it in a $100,000+ flagship coupe. They're putting their base model four-cylinder turbo in the AMG GT.
The GT43. Well, at least I know he's a pleb with one of those.
416 horsepower four-cylinder in... $100,000+ gigantic Mercedes coupe. Okay, so I see that shape and I immediately think the sound of an AMG V8.
Not a farty old V8.
Not a farty four cylinder?
Yeah. Not V8, what am I talking about? Yeah, little four cylinder, yeah. I guess that's better than a corporate V6.
It is, but okay, we do agree. But what?
I would have just not made it.
Yeah, can we just keep the V8 and not do that?
Or could you just not make the car at all?
Well, yeah, I mean...
I would rather the car just not be made.
The GT is like 10 years old.
What is better? A 1982 Corvette or no Corvette?
No Corvette.
Exactly.
This is a 1982 Corvette.
This is your 1982... This is your German 1982 Corvette.
This is the 50th
Corvette.
Anniversary pace car edition.
How much horsepower do the V8s make by comparison?
That's a good question. I think they're like high 500s. So.
Okay, yeah, so you're losing a little bit of power, but not...
Again, that is a metric shit pile of horsepower for a four-cylinder.
I'm also like but Ford, I don't care. This is the thing, is I'm just so jaded with hot rods and Hondas and stuff where I'm just like, yeah, 100 horsepower is fine.
Slow car,
like,
fast?
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, the Fiat, and you know I've never owned a car over 200 horsepower in my life.
The Buick's under 200? Oh, you know, okay, that's Janice.
It's Janice, it's in her name.
Oh, so is the Lexus.
Yeah, I've never owned a car over 200 horsepower.
Yeah, that tracks.
I've had all the fun in the world. So that's the thing. It's like 416 horsepower. It sounds like I could go to the moon with that. Like, that's an insane amount of power to me.
When I bought my 420 SEL, that was my first time ever owning an 8-cylinder car and something with over 200 horsepower. It had 220 horsepower, maybe.
Yeah.
I was pretty tired. And I remember that. I'm like, huh, this is different. And I sold that car almost immediately.
Yep, I've had fast. I've had fun cars. Like, I've had very, very good cars under 200 horsepower. This is a car that's vastly over 200 horsepower, and I cannot imagine this being a whole lot of fun.
No. Had they made this same decision, made a non-AMG GT...
They should have just called this a Mercedes GT.
They should have called it a Mercedes GT and put a shittier engine in it.
Or just even that engine.
Well, sure. But I want it to be even slower.
What, the thing is that the AMG brand... used to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't.
Mm-mm.
It's like the Audi S line. It doesn't mean anything.
Or the M badge now.
M badge doesn't mean anything. Like, credit where it's due, like the Honda Type R badge and the Hyundai inline actually mean something.
Well, yeah, because like, shoot, what were the other ones? ST?
I saw a Kona in yesterday.
A Conan?
Yes, I saw a Kona in when I was at the Black Heart playing bingo.
Automatic only.
That doesn't matter. It's a crossover. Who the fuck cares?
I do, but I'm not the market.
It's a crossover. Who the fuck cares? You're not gonna. It's not gonna be a fun time.
End line still means something. I agree.
Yeah, it's automatic, but still a hell of a lot better than a vanilla Kona
for the warm hatch challenge.
Also, a vanilla Kona sounds like a delicious drink.
It does. Okay, vanilla gets ripped on way too much. It's a banging flavor.
Yes, it is.
I almost picked a Kia Forte for the warm hatch because they made it.
It's not a hatch.
They
did make a hatch,
then?
Yes. No, they made a Forte.
I think they
did.
Did they? Anyway, the small...
I can't be bothered to know.
It doesn't matter, but like, I actually drove a Forte 6-speed one time with just the 1.6.
Yeah, the ST one?
It drove really well.
Yeah, Forte, or the Forte Coupe.
Yeah, K-O-U-P.
Yeah.
But it...
Coupe?
I swear to
the
God,
Forte
it was
coupe.
A... Yeah, Coupe.
No, it's coup, like coup d'etat.
Anyway, other than the engine eating itself to pieces, I'm sure.
Yeah. They're...
It drove pretty well. Like, yeah. the suspension valving wasn't great, but, like, if I had to buy a cheap new car with a stick, like, that would be up my list.
It was a little mild, but, like, yeah. No, like, they weren't bad. I just think...
Like, you can get it with the 1.6 turbo, though.
That era, like, the early 2010s when manufacturers were making, like, sporty versions of not good cars,
mm-hmm.
Like, they were cars that 10 years prior would have been exciting, but they had just done it at a point in which, like... You could get a brand new Kia Forte Coupe or you could, yeah, or you could get a used DSM, or you could get like a kind of clapped out, like bug eye STI. Not even clapped out. You could just get a bug eye STI for the same price. Like at that, they were just like a decade late. Like that car would have been quite cool in like 2002.
And the reason why they still had relevance is because it was the only thing I named the episode, by the way.
Oh, very good. Very good.
But no, it's,
why, don't
it's,
we, why don't we call this one the let's call it the Warm Hatch Challenge.
Fine.
Because we've been talking about warm hatches this whole time. But yeah, it's just
I liked coupe d'etat.
Yeah, that's fair. But God, I just anyway. Oh. Yeah. The Kia Forte was just like, it was like a day late and a dollar short. It was a fine car.
It's an Elantra, it's boring, but you could get a cheap, well warranted car with a manual.
If you had put a Kia Forte coupe side by side on sale next to a Honda Civic Si EP3, that would have been a good pairing.
Yeah, at the same time in 2003.
Yeah, but that came out in 2012.
Yeah,
like you had the Mugen Si
several
had,
generations. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, you had the like Kimmy's car, that generation Mugen Si,
which
that
was one of my favorite generations of Civic.
Yeah, like that was the last good Civic, and then you had like the Corolla XRS that had was still on sale. Actually,
that was the same year the EP3 sold that one time.
Yeah,
the XRS launched.
Yeah, okay, so there was still like a cooler sort of. Well, you had the TC. So you had like cool cars that you could purchase. A very, very tired RSX, I think you could still get. No, you couldn't. No, not in the 2000. Not by 2012.
I thought they launched in 2004.
I need to.
I almost picked a TC, but it wasn't a hatch.
Yeah, it's a coupe. That's right. It stands for Toyota Celica.
Oh.
TC. Because it replaced the Celica.
Back in the day, we were trying to replace our terrible high school vehicle. And we were looking at Bug Eye, STIs, WRXs.
So the first LGTs. Generation Forte Coupe came out in 2008.
Oh, really?
Yes, and there was a hatch as well. Yes.
Okay.
And there was the coupe. So yeah,
the Fortnut.
Okay, the coupe came out in 2010. Okay. It was announced in 2008, but it came out in 2010.
Coupe.
Yeah, the coupe. The Kia Forte coupe was 2010. So, like, the thing is, in 2010, there's a lot of cooler shit that you could buy than a Kia Forte coupe. So.
Yep. And again, the car's a victim of being sold in the wrong era. Too late. Yep. Too late.
Yeah, day late and dollar short.
Like, all it has left for it right now is it's still sold with a manual.
I think I remember actually reading a review of that in Super Street where they were saying, like, this is actually a good car. It's just that we don't understand why this wasn't sold to us 4 years prior.
Right.
Like
even they had the technology.
Like yeah, like the car didn't come out yet, but like if this was the Kia that was offered in 2004, we'd have a very different story about the sport compact tuning era of the 2000s. And I remember that Super Street actually was saying that in their review in Era.
The change in Hyundai Kia from 2003 to 2012 was
massive.
It's it was like paradigm. I mean, it's
it's a huge. It was a completely different company. Shift. And it's just a little bit late for that era. But you know, now they're all stolen.
Yep, and we have the N line, which still means something.
Anyway, so back to the topic, which is the AMG GT flagship.
It's
now shipping with a 4-cylinder. Just kill it.
It's an old car.
I don't need an 82 Corvette. It exists.
Seriously, yeah. If you have to put a restrictor plate in your V8 to make 105 horsepower to barely hit emission standards, don't do it.
Yeah, and so, we were talking about all that stuff about other cars. Like, this is the 82 Corvette already exists. I don't need to spend $100,000+ to get an 82 Corvette. I don't need to buy a Kia Forte Coupe because there's already an EP3 that's cheaper. Like, yeah, it sucks. I don't want it. I don't want it. I'm done.
Years ago, Mercedes made, and I think it was even in production, but they did an all-electric AMG GT. Just do that at this point.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, this one. That, it's the SLS. So it's even longer ago.
Yeah.
Just do that instead.
Also, auto car. auto car. It's because your Google's all messed up because now you're getting things through Autocar India.
Oh, perfect.
That nobody else on earth would be getting. So,
but just don't give us a crappy four cylinder. Just make it electric. We're done.
Make it electric or don't make it. Like I don't need to like
keep it V8. Make it electric. Discontinue it.
You know, by 2050, you're gonna have a base model charger that's gonna have like a 1 liter one cylinder engine that makes like makes like 200 horsepower, and it's like the bare minimum of like there's like one guy like desperately holding on to like internal combustion. Like, I don't want electric. Let it go.
It's gonna be like the world's angriest sounding Vespa going down the road. Yeah, get an LX platform.
I might be interested in that. But anyway, on that bombshell, we'll see you next week. Bye.